And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. When Reverend Sun Myung Moon began his preaching in the early 60s and 70s, he was widely considered to be a kook, even though he had some 30,000 people in America handing out flowers on street corners. A lot of people were upset with him. There were rumors that, in fact, he took young people and dragged them off into a cult, and that he would deprive them of protein or sleep or other ways to make them compliant. Indeed, he was the very definition of a cult. At the beginning, in fact, there were people on the right, good Christians all, who complained about Reverend Sun Myung Moon taking their children away from Christianity, and there were a few, actually, liberals who defended his right to preach his craziness, though I think more and more came to understand that the man was a little bit crazy. Well, today the situation is very different. If you look at the people to whom Reverend Sun Myung Moon has given money, if you look at his supporters, they are a veritable who's who of right-wing Washington. Everyone from Grover Norquist to George H.W. Bush, from Richard Scaife to Richard Viguerie, or any of the right-wingers that you know and love, you will find them all in the book by John Gorenfeld. It's called Bad Mood Rising, How Reverend Moon Created the Washington Times, Seduced the Religious Right, and Built an American Religion. Now, American Kingdom, I should say. Now, I am well familiar with John Gorenfeld. I like to think I helped give the kid his start when he was an investigative reporter trying to tell people who wouldn't listen to him in the mainstream media that Reverend Sun Myung Moon had just been crowned in a Senate office building, literally brought a crown on a pillow by a Illinois congressman, Danny Davis. The mainstream media didn't want his story. I wanted his story. I've always been fascinated in Washington how it is that the second newspaper, or now in fact the third newspaper, the Washington Times, one that loses billions of dollars a year, the one run and controlled by Reverend Sun Myung Moon, could be so influential. So influential, in fact, that it would eventually bring us the very press secretary that would grace the president stage. But John Gorenfeld knows a lot more about Reverend Sun Myung Moon than I do, so let me welcome him to the Inside Scoop. Welcome, John.
Mark, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back. As I said, we had you early on when no one took you seriously. Now you got this big, very, very nice book that I've been reading through, and you're doing a whole bunch of interviews, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I am, but this is the place where you were definitely the first person to have this. I mean, nobody else could believe that literally the Dirksen Senate office building was being used for this sort of Temple of Doom antics where they were literally crowning Reverend Moon the Messiah in a hearing room. And nobody believed me until I found a video, and then nobody believed that until the video became kind of a pre-YouTube kind of internet sensation. And then there it was. There was all this footage of congressmen acting completely nuts. And it turned out that there were some very people associated with kissing up to Reverend Moon, this notorious 70s cult leader. Flash forward to 2004, he's being treated as a god.
Well, I want to get to all the details of how Reverend Sun Myung Moon has influenced religious right. I was just saying to my listeners, I'm impressed that you could name virtually anyone in the right-wing movement, virtually anyone you can think of, and yes, they're in your book. All you have to do is look through the index. You can see their names. Everyone is there. It seems everyone is tainted by him. It was amazing to me that it's not just the billions of dollars that he's funneled into the Washington Times and into Republican movements, but that he's become the intellectual heft of the religious right as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a who's who of people. And what's so incredible is that whether anyone takes it seriously or not, takes his money seriously, but what I was going to say is that he has developed an entire religious right philosophy that he hopes to impose on the United States that involves him as this sort of theocratic guiding light as we scrap democracy. He came to befriend all of these politicians, first of all, during the Cold War as an anti-communist, because he was so powerful in Asia already for being able to put on these anti-communist youth rallies that were sort of fanatical.
So is that how he got his start? I'm opposing communism, I'm nothing wrong with opposing communism. Is that how he eventually got his power and twisted it into his literally messianic complex?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, he was sort of unwelcome in South Korea as the leader of this sex cult where you could supposedly be born again by sleeping with six women. But what happened was at some point he ended up meeting with some Japanese leaders of the right who were impressed by his sort of organizing ability. And together they met in San Francisco, actually, at a meeting here that was described in the book Inside the League by John Lee Anderson, a New Yorker reporter. And they came up with a plan together to start hosting these gigantic stadium rallies where they could indoctrinate young people. The idea was to make them as fanatical about opposing communism as about just about anything else. And so there would be these rallies where people would cry out, victory over communism. And over the years, U.S. politicians of the right started to come to these things.
Well, now back up for me, because I'd be curious to know how Reverend Sun Myung-Moon got his start. I mean, here's a man who's nearing 90. He's been around a very long time. I guess he was born in 1920 or so. When did he start becoming either rich or some kind of leader, some kind of influence?
It's very shadowy, but at some point he emerges in the 1960s as the CEO of all of these companies back home in South Korea, where there was this real harsh dictatorship that was closely regulating who could do anything, and was actually repressing a whole lot of Christian churches, but for some reason found Reverend Moon's organization favorable to their interests and smiled upon him. And so when he came to the United States, he was able to start building up his connections in the 60s based on his connections in Embassy Row. And his right-hand man, Colonel Bohee Pak, was this liaison between the South Korean government and the United States, and that allowed him to make a lot of influential friends in Washington, D.C.
So do we know how he got his money?
Well, he started a ginseng soda factory at one point in Korea, and then he sort of diversified into heavy industry. By 1978, Congress was reporting in this investigation they did of Moon that he was manufacturing munitions and heavy arms for the South Korean government. And today he makes a lot of money on sushi. But
I like sushi. Are you telling me I shouldn't eat sushi?
Too. But the Chicago Tribune discovered a couple of years back that he has a near monopoly on the United States sushi industry because of his ability to catch sort of the kind of really good tuna that's required to make sushi. The company True World Foods that delivers to most sushi chefs in the country.
Wow, so he's got a kind of a big mafia outfit here. So was he a legitimate businessman, or was he kind of milking the dictatorship of South Korea?
That whole area is really murky, but I'll tell you what's illegitimate is throughout the 90s he began shifting his focus to raising cash in Japan through high pressure sales scams, where they would
give me an example of one of those high pressure sales scams.
They would sort of seek out really lonely widows who were desperate and emotionally vulnerable after losing their husbands, and they would send a woman to knock on the door and say, "Hey, you should get out. You need a friend. Come with me, and we should go tour a gallery across town." The gallery would be owned by the Moonies, and they would try to sell these overly high paintings to her. And then as she got deeper and deeper into it, they would say, "Hey, you should come see this this great teacher, Nagayoshi, who's across town, and this is a rare opportunity to meet a really wise Buddhist teacher. You should come. He can reassure you that your husband is okay in the afterlife." And so they
a Buddhist, but I thought Mooney was a Christian. Well, I guess he's a Mooney. I mean, I guess he's above all religions.
Yeah, he claims to be a sort of a meta-religion that's bringing all of them together. But sort of on a more practical basis, he sort of lies and pretends to be a Christian while approaching Christians, pretends to be a Buddhist while approaching Buddhists. They have this all
faced
out. They're not even two-faced. It's something like ten-faced.
He's a man of all people. So he got his start, I guess, in the 60s and 70s, parlaying this munitions and other money that he'd earned in business, legitimately or illegitimately, I'm not sure. And that's when he became famous in the 1970s with what we think of as Moonies, right? We think, when I think of a Moonie, and I admit this is a dated impression, but I think of 1970s hippie flower children, if you will, who'd lost their way and didn't know who to look to, and so joined the Reverend Sun Myung-moon's church as a way to be, I don't know, with other flower children. Is that an unfair characterization?
It's very true. I mean, the Moonies were almost like the anti-hippies because they were these reactionaries who were rigidly controlled, and they thought Nixon was appointed by God. But they drew on a lot of lost children that wanted to be hippies and were kind of coming to it a little bit late. And there was this this void in the 70s where all these sort of predatory leaders were exploiting people, you know, people's really sincere desires to be part of something, even though the 60s were over. And then they wound up at the mass weddings held by Reverend Moon, where they were matched to spouses assigned to them by him at his whim as a show of domination over them.
When did the mass weddings start? Or have they always been part of Reverend Moon's church?
The biggest one, it was sort of a... It was always there, but the numbers started to increase over the years, more and more and more couples. And so the biggest one was in 1982, where it was something like 2,000 couples were married at Madison Square Garden. And across the street, Moon had purchased a New Yorker hotel, which he had turned into his World Mission Center. And he just had this mad idea that it was going to spread from there and transform the country into this Mooney empire under him.
He decides who marries whom. That's his decision. You get to know your spouse because Reverend Moon picks your spouse for you.
Yeah, Reverend Moon. In fact, there was a great Wall Street Journal article a few years back in the 90s that talked about how he was doing it by barcode now. They were making the process really efficient.
By barcode?
Yeah, they were using...
Does he put barcodes on human beings? I didn't realize I had a barcode. I thought that was just the food I buy.
Not on people, but just they had some sort of really sophisticated thing where they could just run a scanner over a few barcodes and quickly decide, you know, this person should be with this person. And Moon would glance at different people's Polaroid pictures and say, okay, this person, marry that one. This person, marry that one. And the idea was that God was guiding him and that he could help you create a perfect family and he could tell you how to have sex and just basically have complete control over his followers.
Well, it's a lot easier than Match.com. Right? I mean, you don't have to worry about different ones. Just it's picked out for you. Now, how long do you get to know your spouse before you marry your spouse in the Moon Church?
No, not very long. Right before the wedding, they would have this pairing off at the New Yorker Hotel. This is sort of the classic Moon way to do it. And you've just met this person, and you're marrying them. And then after the marriage, you're not allowed to have your honeymoon yet. You're dispatched on this sort of 30-day or more sex-free missionary tour. Then you get back together.
Wait, the sex-free missionary tour? Some kind of honeymoon?
Yeah, well, the honeymoon is sort of what you're waiting for while you're out there serving Moon and being so grateful that he's given you a wife. And then you come back and you have to hit each other with these sticks. It's really violent and strange. And then after you hit somebody to get the scourge of Satan out of their bodies with these kendo sticks, you have sex in the positions that Reverend Moon has laid out and his plans. It's called the 3-day ceremony with the woman on the top at first and the man on the top at the end, because the male becomes supreme again, like in the Garden of Eden, or like the Garden of Eden should have been. He says that he's fixing mistakes that humans made a long time ago. But this is sort
this,
of... What,
I was going to say, this may be too much detail. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the deeper you
but
get
so these
into
are ex-flower
it,
children? Who are these people? Are they mostly Koreans or Korean-Americans or just old Americans? Or
these are white middle-class Americans who were running away from home and joining the Moonies by the thousands back then. And people were unable to explain what is the appeal of this guy that, you know, he has charisma. He gets up there and he just shouts at people, sort of sounding like Hitler, about how Satan has invaded the United States. And all these young people apparently willing to kill or die for him.
Actually, John, you sent me a clip of Moon's 1974 speech at Madison Square Garden. I'd like to play it's 45 minutes long. Don't worry, folks. I'm not going to play more than about a minute.
Yeah.
But that would be cruel and unusual punishment to my listeners. But I do want to give them a small taste of what Reverend Sun Young Moon is like.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we are living in parallel time. The paralleling time. Time of Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago. We are living in the same time of the Jewish faithful who are waiting for the first coming of the Messiah. Today, we must know clearly the true meaning of the Bible, because Bible is written in symbols and parables. Jewish faith has Old Testament. The Christianity today have Old Testament plus New Testament. by knowing the deeper inner meaning of the truth in the Bible, we shall know the truth.
I'm going to scroll forward to the part where he calls Jesus a failure.
Jesus refused to answer yes or no. But Jesus said, blessed is he who takes no offense at me. You poor John, man of little faith, you are now taking offense at me. You failed your mission. You do not no longer recognize me who I am.
I hope you could understand that it says that, Jesus,
so much of that
Jesus failed to his mission. Well, I didn't really, John. I just played the beginning and the end, and I noticed that Jesus failed part. I wanted to play it to listeners. Please,
I only could
tolerate so much of it. What is he so angry about? Is that just the Korean language? Or?
No, I know. I mean, look, Reverend Moon is not a typical Korean. He's not welcome in South Korea, and I hope nobody gets the impression from this that this is typical culture at all. But Reverend Moon has this belief, this grudge against John the Baptist, first of all. He rants and rails about John the Baptist supposedly giving Jesus a raw deal. He's mad that the Jews caused Jesus to get killed by screwing up.
So in that way, he's not different from some Christian preachers I've heard before.
No, I mean, officially, Christians are supposed to have renounced that sort of Holocaust theology where, the Nazi Holocaust was punishment for killing Christ and stuff like that. I mean, that's what Reverend Moon is all about. But, I mean, the point is that the deeper you get into this stuff, the less and less he seems like a guy that the religious right ought to be associating with, setting him up.
Well, that's what I want to focus on, because that is the focus of your book. I simply wanted to let people know how crazy he was before we get into the real focus, which is how much influence he has, because I got one more thing you sent me that I just think is amazing, and I just got to play it for my listeners, and that is apparently Reverend Sun Myung Moon has been endorsed not just by George Herbert Walker Bush, but by a number of dead presidents. Is that right?
According to him, and according to some newspaper advertisements he's taken out that have cost a lot of money.
How many dead presidents have endorsed him?
36, because 36 is sort of a special number. He believes that all the presidents running up through about Nixon have endorsed him and said, we led really miserable, worthless lives. We wish that we had, understood that Reverend Moon was
the Messiah. Ford broke the chain, huh? Well, good for Ford. I want to play for my listeners the endorsement of our first president, George Washington. Now, I need to make clear, John Gordonfeld, of course, hired an actor to play George Washington, but the actor is reading the text of what Reverend Sun Myung Moon says is his endorsement by our first president, George Washington.
I, George Washington, am deeply moved to learn the identity of Reverend Sun Myung Moon. The Messiah is giving unlimited love to the people of the United States. Yet the people of America are greatly lacking in sincerity and dedication in attending the Messiah. I realize that the American people are blessed by the mere fact that the Messiah is present on American soil, and yet they appear unable to realize this deeply. I am deeply distressed over this. George Washington, first president of the United States.
George Washington's mad at us if we don't accept Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Who knew?
Very distressed. That's sort of supposed to be in the style, by the way, of Ken Burns' Civil War.
I got it. Nice little violin in the background.
George Washington is one thing. He even claims that James K. Polk and, all of these people who, during their lives, were more interested in things like the gold and silver standard, he would have us believe that they're now in heaven fretting about the fact that the American people haven't united behind Reverend Moon. And I'll tell you another thing. I have a piece of video where they've published these announcements in an ad in the Washington Times. I'm sure they got a discount on it that was pretty steep. And the lead preacher of the Unification Church in America, Michael Jenkins, is holding up the Washington and saying this is a historic document, and that the Washington Times has been used to proclaim Reverend Moon's truth unto the nation.
I think we need to talk about the Washington Times, because that really was the organ of transformation. Prior to the Washington Times formation in 1982, Reverend Moon was seen by liberals and conservatives as a kook, much like, Lyndon LaRouche or Scientology. By the way, folks, I'm doing an entire show on Scientology next week on Thursday. This is cult time here on The Inside Scoop. But it seems that there were actually a number of conservatives. Bob Dole even originally opposed Moon and tried to protect people from him in the 70s, right?
Yeah, and in fact, going into the archives, I found these articles where people in Kansas were saying, God, we really hope that Senator Dole is going to protect our kids from Reverend Moon. And Dole even held two different hearings about the threat of the Unification Church and other cults. Flash forward about 25 years, and he was showing up at Washington Times events. But back then...
Nice to know Bob Dole can be bought, apparently not just by Viagra, but by Reverend Sun Myung Moon.
Yeah.
So everything changes in 1982 when he found the Washington Times newspaper, a newspaper that loses how much each year?
Oh, boy, $100 million a year, I think. The total has been $3 billion since 1982, so I may have to pull out a calculator and do the math.
I could tell you as a Washingtonian that nobody reads this paper at all. They read the Washington Post, and then they read even the Washington Examiner, which no one outside of Washington's ever heard of. It's basically just an events newspaper. Nobody reads the Washington Times, but if you go on the Internet and you want to read the latest Swift boat against Barack Obama, or you want to read the nice made-up things about Hillary Clinton, the Washington Times will be cited, sent around by email, and people will think it's a legitimate newspaper.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost the joke, isn't it, that people in Washington don't really read the Washington Times, but the con being put over on most of the American heartland is, oh, this is an important newspaper, and, oh, the Washington Times reported today that Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction were moved to Syria. And when you talk to someone who listens to conservative radio habitually, they'll tell you, oh, yeah, the Washington Times, sure. I think liberals tend to underestimate how much reach it has. But
yeah, because no one in Washington cares about the newspaper, but people outside the region, I guess they combine Washington Post and New York Times, and they actually think it's a legitimate newspaper.
Oh, yeah, and it's quoted on Fox constantly, and people like Tony Blankley, the old opinion page editor, sort of have used it as a platform to get all this airtime, and it's just this huge eminence front. It's this propaganda device that's been funded at a huge loss as part of this sort of deal with the devil, where, you know, 4 years before the Washington Times rolls out, Bob Dole is calling the Moonies a mind control cult that exists for political purposes, and suddenly nothing. Suddenly everybody goes quiet. Reverend Moon isn't deported. And he's just humming along and free to go about his business.
So there was a threat to even deport.
He was behind bars for a few months.
I was just going to say, before he founded the Washington Times, there was even a threat to deport him as someone who'd done a lot of danger to American young people with his cult movement.
And who had basically no business being in the United States, operating freely and basically flaunting a lot of our rules, whether it was cheating on taxes, you know, money laundering.
Right. Now, eventually, he would go to jail for a tax felony. When was that?
He was convicted in 82, and he went behind bars in 84, and he had...
Oh, no. So this is interesting. So he founded the Washington Times around the same time he was convicted of cheating on his taxes so severely that it was a felony.
Yeah. I mean, it really couldn't have come to, you know, at a better time for him.
Much a planned event, the Washington Times. It was his goal to regain respectability after his conviction?
He didn't think he was going to get convicted as he was rushing to start this thing. He had already actually been invited to the Reagan inauguration in 1980. He'd begun to form ties with various politicians and given money, but the tax case was something that, according to Robert Perry, who knows a little bit more about this than I do, the great journalist from Consortium News, that the Reagan Justice Department didn't really want to prosecute him for tax fraud, but the people looking into the case in New York were able to make it happen in the Justice Department. But he was really just so blatant, where they had fabricated documents that were supposed to be from 1976, and they were really from 1977, to avoid paying taxes on personal accounts and business income.
He's in trouble with the tax authorities, and at that time he decides to start the Washington Times newspaper. Now, is it clear from documents or anything you've read, is his goal to buy influence? Is he that clear, or is it just obvious from what he did?
I think it's obvious that he's always wanted to buy influence, both from his public statements about how, you know, he would tell his followers in the old days that, you know, keep your mouth shut, but we're going to influence so-and-so and this and this many congressmen, and the whole nation will bow down to me. But also, it's not just me and Reverend Moon's speeches saying that. There's also this Korea Gate investigation in 78, and Congressman Donald Frazier led this House panel where they concluded that the goal of the Moon Organization was this large, ambitious entity that determined to gain power in Washington by any means necessary.
You know, it's interesting. Almost nobody mentions Korea Gate anymore. We talk about Abscam occasionally, rarely. But this was, I guess, a similar idea, right? A bunch of Korea businessmen trying to bribe congressmen, just as Abscam was FBI agents dressed up as Arabs?
Yeah, the South Korean government was concerned that the United States would withdraw troops from Seoul and leave them vulnerable to North Korea. So they decided to bribe congressmen. And attention in the probe focused on Reverend Moon and some of his influence peddling activity that was a little bit separate but actually more interesting than what was going on with the bribery, that Reverend Moon had been doing all of this sort of mail fraud going back about 10 years, in which he'd money to supposedly to fight communism behind this front group, the Korean Culture and Freedom Foundation. Oddly enough, the guy sending out the letters for Reverend Moon's Culture and Freedom Federation fundraising activities that raised so much cash for the Unification Church was a guy named Richard Viguerie, who historians of the Reagan Revolution will know as the founding funder of getting Reagan into office. That he was.
Yeah, Richard Viguerie is known as the founding father of conservative funding. He is the first big money man in conservative politics. Now, what's his connection with Moon?
He has this business relationship going back to 1965, where I literally found a letter, and Richard Viguerie dictating a letter or writing a Bohipok, Reverend Moon's right-hand man, saying this guy's been really great to work with. And the Richard A. Viguerie Company, which was just getting its start after the Goldwater campaign, which is where, you know, the legend is that he began to, he was the only guy with the vision to see that all of these people who were so passionate about Goldwater could be marshaled into this direct mail fundraising movement that could power a new wave of conservatism. Well, it turns out that only a year after Goldwater loses, Viguerie is getting money from Reverend Moon, which really makes you wonder. I mean, how much of this guy's rise is due to his people powered politics, and how much is due to people like Reverend Moon coming in to bail him out?
Like the Saudis were to George W. Bush, it looks like Reverend Sun Young Moon is to the conservative movement. I mean, he's kind of the backroom funder who's making sure that they get the word out.
Or whoever is behind Reverend Moon funneling money through him. I mean, it really is mysterious where all of this cash comes from. And anyway, the Viguerie relationship continues for years, and in the 80s, when Viguerie was facing bankruptcy, the Moonies gave him a sweetheart deal, purchasing a $9 million office building for $10 million from him, and giving him a lucrative contract, and so on and so forth. And then Viguerie ends up on the board of something called the American Freedom Coalition in 88, which was a pro-Bush campaign organization, sort of like the MoveOn.org of its day, funded with $5 million from Reverend Moon. So there's a lot of Reverend Moon money that's been spread around conservatism over the years.
Is this how he buys respectability? He gets the newspaper in 82, and people like Bob Dole, who condemned him in the 70s, already 10 years later, he's funding ex-president George Bush Sr. within 10 years of finding the Washington Times. How did he go from 82 to 92, from going from outcast, tax felon, messiah-claiming weirdo to the patron of the religious and conservative right?
It really had to do with everyone's sheer shamelessness, in that the media at first had all of these stories about, oh my God, there's this strange alliance forming between Reverend Moon and the religious right, and basically, they didn't really react or do much, and it just kept going on and on and on, and the media decided, oh, this is an old story. By 1989, U.S. News and World Report was saying that nearly every conservative organization in Washington had some connection to the Unification Church, and that conservatives were afraid to say anything about it, people who were upset about the role of Reverend Moon, because they didn't want to embarrass their friends. So it became this very tight-knit connection.
Now, Joe, this is fascinating to me because virtually every conservative I've ever met We'll talk about George Soros and how it is that he's funded all these liberal causes. And, of course, Soros has given a lot of money to a few groups, and someone who tries to get money for progressive causes, I can tell you, not all that many groups. But virtually no one, it seems, realizes how much Reverend Sun Myung Moon has given. Because why won't the press cover this kind of thing?
There's this sort of amazing blindness to Reverend Moon, and I don't know how much of it is sort of having a tin ear for outrage. I mean, for some reason, they seem to be taking their guidance from the right on what's important and what isn't, and the Democrats won't make any noise about it, and I think that's part of it. I think that...
I'm surprised they don't. When did George Herbert Walker Bush start getting money from Reverend Sun Myung Moon? Was it after he stopped being president?
Yeah, after he retired and was building up all of this money through speaking fees, he made at least $2 million around 95, 96 on a whole series of speaking appearances. I believe Jack Kemp was also involved, and they went to Japan and Argentina. And in Japan, Reverend Moon really needed the help because he was on the verge of having his church thrown out of the country because the Supreme Court in Japan was ruling against them for ripping off all of these widows. And there was this huge backlash pulse after the 1995 subway gassing by the, you know, the other cult, the Aum Supreme Truth people. And Bush shows up and speaks at the Tokyo Dome in 1995 with Mrs. Moon, pretends that he has no idea what the Unification Church connection is, goes, oh, I just think this is some sort of world peace event bringing Japan and the U.S. closer together. And
wait. Who did he say he had no idea what this was to? To a reporter?
I think it was the Washington Post. Yeah, asked him, Mr. Bush, why are you going to Japan with Mrs. Moon, Reverend Moon's wife? And he said, and his spokesman just said, you know, I think these people are just interested in peace and harmony. And then he gets there, and, you know, Mrs. Moon is telling the crowd, I urge you to listen to Reverend Moon's message. And they made a lot of money in ticket sales off that, and even more just prestige in terms of.
Well, sure. Now they pay George Bush Sr. They pay him $2 million for this.
Yeah, well, his going rate was something like $1 million in appearance, I believe. But he made a whole series of stops in Japan, and then a number of them in Latin America. So the lowball estimate is something like $2 million for all of that.
Now, in your book, you say that George Bush was asked to do things that showed, I want to get the words right, you'll give me the right words, but either degrading things or things that shows his obedience to Reverend Sun Myung Moon as his messiah and master, or at least that's how it was portrayed by the Moon organization. Is that right? They tried to make Bush Sr. seem subservient to Reverend Moon?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that Bush going on was just very cynical about picking up his money. But whether it was getting Barbara Bush to walk in some sort of Sisters of Peace ceremony, they called it, or...
But Barbara Bush? Somehow I can't see her wearing, you know, the peace flowers. She walked in a Sisters of Peace ceremony?
Well, according to a Reverend Moon church newsletter that was describing one of these events where we know Barbara Bush went, it described that she joined arms or something like that with a Japanese woman, and they were repenting for the enmity from World War II. But, you know, the part that really sticks out is just how degrading the way they talk about George Bush is. They don't show a lot of gratitude for this guy going to the ends of the earth for Reverend Moon, and instead there are these speeches where they say, you know, the Japanese people be impressed by the fact that it looked like Father Moon could plan an American president's schedule, you know, a white man being ordered around by an Asian, and that helped us gain favor with the Japanese political establishment. And it's really pretty.
So they openly brag that
an president.
I was just going to say, they openly brag then, the Moon Church, that an Asian could boss around the United States president, and that shows the power of Reverend Sun Myung Moon.
Yeah, and in fact, there's another one. You just reminded me of another time where Reverend Moon was speaking around the time of the end of the first Gulf War, and he started talking about how Bush, he says, he's talking at the New Yorker Hotel in Manhattan, and he's saying, I always told you that President Bush had a hollow trunk, that he had no gut. A person who could tell Bush what to do is Moon, me, Moon, you know, this sort of maniacal behavior that you expect to see in a horror movie, not in United States mainstream politics.
Yeah, maybe a James Bond film where the guy turns around in the chair and is about to take over the world. I control U.S. presidents. But
well,
it seems to me that... Go ahead.
You wouldn't think that people like that exist who... It turns out that outside of movies, there really are people who sit around thinking about world domination, and that's their hobby, and this guy is one of them.
Not just a cartoon. Now, what's interesting to me, though, is virtually every person in the conservative movement is in your book, Bad Moon Rising. I've read a good portion of this. I'm about halfway done. And, you know, Karl Rove in the early 1970s, and Richard Nixon, he's in your book.
Yeah.
Richard Mellon Scaife, who spent so much time building the Arkansas Project, trying to find Bill Clinton sleeping around, he's in your book. I mean, Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, I was about to get to the religious leaders in your book. Let's start, I guess, with Karl Rove. What's his connection to Reverend Moon?
Well, the Karl Rove connection is a loose one, but it's just an interesting moment that I chose to describe, where I was looking through Karl Rove's papers at the Hoover Institute at Stanford, and around the time of Watergate, Karl Rove has been firing off all these letters saying, look, we need to fight the Watergate effect by building up a youth campus movement that's going to win the debate and organize and mobilize. And, well, in one letter, it's to George H.W. Bush, and Mr. Bush at that time is at the RNC, and Rove is at the College Republicans, and he says, you know, Mr. Bush, I just wanted to brag about the fact that we just won some elections. There's something called the U.S. Youth Council, I believe. It's a State Department group that gave tours for college kids. Anyway, he's just saying, Karl Rove is excited about every opportunity to clean out liberals from campus institutions. And he's saying, we have people from this group who've won the election. You know, there's hardly any liberals. We have youth guys. We have people from the Freedom Leadership Foundation. And the Freedom Leadership Foundation is Reverend Moon's crazy campus group, kind of like the LaRouche's. And I'm thinking, well, did Rove know that the FLF was a Mooney group? And then I continue looking through his papers, and there's letters to Mr. Rove from a girl who's flirting with him, and there's letters from someone who ran a place who says, "Dear Mr. Rove, I apologize for screwing up your dinner." And then lo and behold, there's a copy of Reverend Moon's Freedom Leadership Foundation campus newsletter, Rising Tide, which is this nut job publication that features Reverend Moon and talks very much about how he's the force behind the FLF. So it would be really hard for Rove to be tied into campus conservatism at that time and not miss the presence of Moon. And I asked the guy that wrote Bush's Brain and ran that by him, and I said, "Do you think Rove knew?" And he says, "Yeah, I think most likely that's Karl Rove looking for every possible resource to exploit."
Two more names, again, familiar to anyone who studied the conservative movement. Grover Norquist, the tax man who never met a tax he liked and wants to basically end taxes until he can drown the government in the bathtub. And Jack Abramoff, famous for bribery and for serving a long-time prison sentence for bribery. They were involved with Moon?
Yeah, well, a little bit after the Washington Times launched, there was a congressman, Representative Leach, Jim Leach, a moderate Republican, who was really concerned about the rise of Reverend Moon in the party, and he held a press conference to say, look, there's this cynical pact being made between people in my party and Reverend Moon, and are we going to be that kind of party? Are we going to team up with someone like Reverend Moon? And he accused Grover Norquist and Jack Abramoff, who were campus youth leaders at the College Republican.
Up and coming tricksters in 1983.
Stars. And they, Norquist showed up at his press conference and threw a fit and said, "That's a lie. And, you know, you're accusing us of taking money from this church, and that's a crime." And
so that's what they said back in 83.
That's what they said back then, because back then you did not want to be associated with Reverend Moon.
But fast forward to today,
money from everybody.
Fast forward today, the Fox propaganda channel seems to feature Washington Times columnists, not just them, but even MSNBC, CNN. The Mooney newspaper has gained this respectability. I mean, I can't think of columnists from, I don't know, the New Orleans Times-Picayune or even the Chicago Tribune or LA Times appearing on television as much as people from the Washington Times. How do they do that?
Great point. It's a great point. I mean, why shouldn't the Cleveland Plain Dealer guy be up there on television instead of...
Why shouldn't the recycler that sells used parts, which has a greater readership than the Washington Times, why shouldn't they be there, much less, you know, the Kansas City newspaper or the Dallas newspaper?
Right. No, it's astonishing. The Washington Times is this huge propaganda wedge for the right, paid for by this cult that's literally, you know, ripping off pensions from old ladies across the Pacific. It's just how much more morally degenerate can you get?
Now, one of the people, of course, that have gotten very famous is the White House press secretary. And he is a former Washington Times reporter.
Yeah, he used to be opinion
piece editor. The ex-press secretary, Tony Snow.
And he became George W. Bush's press secretary after working at the Mooney Times. After, by the way, some other conservatives had warned him, don't work for this company. You'll have to work for Reverend Moon. You'll have to compromise your principles. That the Moonies have all this influence over the coverage. And he went ahead and did it anyway.
How long was Tony Snow with the Washington Times?
Oh, I can't remember. I actually,
but several years.
Yeah, several years.
And of course, he goes from there to Fox News to being presidential press secretary, the face of the president to the world, a guy that worked for a crazed, messianic, complex tax felon. Not to mention his sexual weirdness.
Why isn't this common knowledge that this is a common...
I don't know why it's not common knowledge. I have to say, John, I mention this all the time on the show. Every time I mention Tony Snow, I said ex-Mooney or ex-Moon guy. But what's amazing to me, though, is here you have a man who you've pointed out is all things to all people. He's a Buddhist to the Buddhists. He's a Christian to the Christians. He's of course, calls Jesus a failure, so I don't know and what kind of good Christian he is. And he's, of course, has this campaign to remove churches' crosses and replace them with crowns, so he's actually destroying the church in a way that, I don't know, Jews, Muslims, pagans, abortionists, and homosexuals have never done. They're not like taking crosses down off churches, and yet the very person who said that feminists, abortions, pagans, homosexuals caused 9/11, Jerry Falwell, someone who supposedly would care about Christianity, he had no problem taking money from Reverend Sun Yung-moon.
And those are the kind of people that Moon has rewarded, people likely to call the United States satanic.
Well, tell me about the relationship between the religious right, specifically. Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, how has Moon influenced them or given them money?
That's another you-name-it situation, where starting around the time he went behind bars, they came up with an initiative called the New Birth Project, and the idea was that they were going to pay huge amounts of money to the Christian right establishment. Their dream was that they would become a recognized church in the States, as a recognized Christian church. It did not work. However, they were able to purchase friends, ranging from Tim LaHaye. People will know him as the guy who wrote Left Behind, but back then he was...
Tim LaHaye, absolutely. We talk about him all the time here. How's he connected to Moon?
He took money from him, and he visited him. He took money for the American Coalition for Traditional Values, and this didn't turn... This would have been a secret except that Mother Jones went to go interview his wife, Bev LaHaye, of Concerned Women for America, and they were very courteous, and when she ran out of cassette tape, this was back in the analog days, they gave her a new tape, and she went home to listen to it, and on the flip side was they had accidentally given her a tape with Tim LaHaye reading a letter to the Mooney leadership.
No way. That's how we found out about this?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Like, dear Mr. Pack, here I am on a plane. I'm paraphrasing here. Something like, you know, my prayers are with you. And he refers to Moon as the master. And they have a little joke about, you know, let's hope that the liberal Supreme Court justices get sick. And I guess that's conservative humor. And they talk about teaming up to put Falwell on the Republican ticket in '88, which is totally silly, but very interesting. And the other thing is that LaHaye visited Moon in prison and apologized to him, according to the Moon press, saying that Moon had suffered a great injustice and that Tim LaHaye and Moon were like brothers.
Let's talk about someone who's even more mainstream than Tim LaHaye. Yeah, let's talk about Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. Now, Jerry Falwell's Liberty University was literally saved by Reverend Moon with $3.5 million, I guess, saved the university?
Yeah, Falwell came up with this fish story that some congregants, I think, had mortgaged their home and had come through with the money. But it turned out that the money was actually in the form of $3.5 million from Reverend Moon himself. And he admitted it and said that he subscribed to Billy Sunday's philosophy, the old revivalist, that if you were taking money from the KKK, you were taking money from the devil, so it was okay. But of course,
Falwell says that he'll take money from anybody, from the devil incarnate. That's okay as long as he gets the money. That's his
right.
position.
Of course, he may not see him as the devil incarnate. Seeing that picture that emerged of him hugging Reverend Moon at an event in Latin America, and what's so amazing about that is that Falwell in the 70s, back when Bob Dole and everybody else was opposing Moon, Falwell gave an interview to Esquire magazine, and he said that Reverend Moon, quote, is like the plague. He exploits women, he exploits girls and boys, and then turned around and didn't have that sort of problem with him.
Now, he's even buying up our news services, right? I mean, UPI. I mean, when I think of the great press agencies, there's only two or three. There's the Associated Press, the AP, UPI, United Press International, and then maybe to a lesser extent, Reuters. That's it. I mean, that's the wire news services. They control 80-90% of the news that comes across our desk. He bought UPI?
He bought UPI, but, you know, that should be qualified with the fact that UPI is kind of a shell of its former self. I mean, not in the least thanks to Moon running it into the ground, but the UPI does not have the heft it used to have. Well, when Moon bought it in 2000, Helen Thomas, legendary reporter, decided that she could not work for Reverend Moon and quit. And she said that more recently she gave an interview to Wonkette where she said that it was because she had heard all of the stories of families that had suffered so much because of the Moonies. She's old enough to remember. So are a whole lot of other people who conveniently choose not to remember.
We have a lot more to talk about. I do want to give a chance for listeners to come in if they want to ask questions about Reverend Sun Young Moon or his influence in Washington and the United States of America. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. My guest is John Gorenfeld. He is the author of Bad Moon Rising, How Reverend Moon Created the Washington Times, Seduced the Religious Right, and Built an American Kingdom. Now, what's striking to me in all of this, John, I guess, is how this is right in our face, and yet no one talks about it. I mean, you know, for all the conspiracy theories that people throw across my desk, most of them I don't believe unless I see evidence of it, you know, crazy 9/11 conspiracies or things like that. Here you have a man who, like a James Bond film, is literally, you know, putting his hands together and saying, I will control the world, taking an ex-president, this president's father, and degrading him around, you know, parading and degrading him, like a puppet on a leash, saying, look, I control this guy, financing virtually all of the religious right, and controlling a newspaper that's increasingly treated as respectable. In fact, it's press... It's reported because press secretary, and virtually nobody knows that Reverend Moon's influence.
No, and I think people think that, well, if it was a big deal, the Democrats would make a big deal of it. And because
why don't they? Is it because he buys off selective Democrats like Danny Davis, and he gives a little bit of money to them, and they'd be embarrassed? Why don't the Democrats do anything about it?
They spelled it all out in a memo from 1989 that showed up in the Washington Post, where Gary Jarman, who's this sleazy lobbyist that got his money ripping off old people in the United States with this phony senior federation. We can talk about that later, but he laid it all out in this memo where he said that if we invite a few Democrats to our event, it will help to protect our conservative friends during election time. And it's as simple as that. It's an old trick for.
It is an old trick. It's one thing that a lot of...
Put a little bit of money on the other side.
That's right. It's a lot. Even the oil companies do it. They'll give 90% to Republicans, and then they'll give 10% to Democrats. And that way, if Nancy Pelosi or someone complains about oil company influence, then all they do is say, well, we gave to Democrats, and Americans can't figure out, apparently, the difference between $1 billion given to one party and $1 million given to another party. And so they say, well, they give to both parties. It's not that big a deal. So who are these... Democrats that are taking the money, who are the people on our supposedly on our side of the aisle who are being bought off?
Well, there was Danny Davis, but to his credit, this Chicago Democrat that brought Moon his crown, he after that, he announced that he wasn't going to have anything more to do with them. Conservatives do continue to have associations with Moon, associations through the Washington Times. Other Democrats, it's just sort of sporadic. You'll go to a Reverend Moon event, like I did, in San Francisco, and they'll say that our event, and they'll be naming local officials and state officials who they claim endorsed the event, and they'll always get these proclamations. How much of it is through trickery, how much isn't, is unclear, because they'll submit it as the Universal Peace Federation. You know, they'll say, we're a peace organization, and we got Senator Feinstein to send a letter thanking us for our work in bringing peace to the world or campaigning for peace. And so you have all these people, you know, really.
So some of it is they're just tricking people.
What's that?
Some of it's just trickery. I mean, I like Charlie Rangel. He's a good politician. I like what he has to say almost always. I can't imagine Charlie Rangel intentionally supporting Reverend Sun Yat-moon. Am I wrong?
I just don't know, because the Reverend Moon people I just don't know. They managed to get these people, or at least they did until my big scoop. They would manage to get people like Danny Davis to show up at their event, people who would normally claim to have been tricked, but then there they were, and they should know better. Charlie Rangel put out a proclamation claiming that Moon was the true parents. He and his wife were the true parents of humanity. Yeah,
Charlie Rangel? Now, has he backed off this? Has he apologized?
No, they just. I called up the office years ago, and they said, "Well, you know, we weren't. You know, somebody said some sort of like half, you know, justification for it, and that was it." And nobody is just.
I'm so disappointed because I like Charlie Rangel. I'm very disappointed.
I like him too. I mean, I just looked on the web, and I was doing a Google search for the names of Reverend Moon's front groups, like the IIFWP, which is the Interreligious and International Federation for World Peace. And you look at that on the web, and up comes Dirk Kempthorne, the Secretary of the Interior, has issued a proclamation saying, you know, thank you to the IIFWP. They're able to get proclamations. And what I don't understand is why they're, especially after my coronation story, why there isn't some kind of Amber Alert out, or, you know, don't send proclamations to these people.
Absolutely. I mean, Nancy Pelosi has told Democrats not to appear on Colbert's show. It seems to me that this is a much more serious thing. Now, I should tell you, you have your detractors, John, already on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. Before we even did this show, you were attacked by a man who calls himself Stephen Taylor. I don't know whether that's his real name or not. Stephen, if you're listening, by all means, call it in. You know, don't just write nasty stuff on my blog. We'd love to hear from you at 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. But here's what Stephen Taylor writes. And John, you know, I got to say, this is strong stuff. He writes about you, John, that you failed in an attempted career as a legitimate, disciplined journalist subject to the rigors of fact-checking. And now, Stephen Taylor says about you, John, you are a bigot of the worst kind, that you rail against people of faith and stand for family values. He claims you're gay. He says that you've denied freedom to people because they fear America's Jewish, Catholic, black, white, Asian, and political diversity. Is this just a hit attack? Is this some Mooney? I mean, who is this guy?
Mark, it's really sad. These people are all trained to believe that anybody who criticizes Moon, who, you know, isn't a victim, he lives in this massive palace in Seoul, Korea, and publishes the Washington Times, they're trained to believe that the outside world is satanic, and that any minute now there's going to be uprising and people are going to cart them off to concentration camps, and they're trained to see all critics as religious bigots. And you
John,
know,
we have a caller. Let me get right to him because we don't have much time left. Kevin from Brooklyn, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi. I need to comment and say I know how these people operate. When I was in college, they are very deceptive. They'll come off as the most legitimate source in the world, and it's kind of like you think they're genuine. Because, you know, I had a professor who tried to organize a trip to the Soviet Union. I was an international relations major. And they had this organization where it will come off as very official-looking, you know, exchange with the former republics and all that.
Kevin, was the professor connected to Reverend Moon?
Yes, and it was all sponsored by the Unification Church.
But how did a guy like that get to be professor? I assume this was a decent university. Did he disclose his Mooney ties?
No, he didn't even know. And
he didn't know.
At the last minute, and nobody wants to lose face at the last minute. Thank God this professor was gracious enough to be willing to lose face at the last minute. They have you in, and that's when they finally come out that they're part of the Unification Church.
John, is this common where they're sponsoring trips for universities that and don't tell them it's connected to Moon?
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, they've been doing that since the 70s, where they had something called the Unity of the Sciences Conference, and they tried to compromise all these by bringing it under this conference.
And next thing you know, you're so waist deep in it,
right?
That you realize, wow, I've been getting funding from the Unification Church all along. And, you know, you don't want to go back on what you promised to the people and all that.
Right.
And how many politicians are going to risk that?
Yeah, exactly. And nobody wants to, you know, no politician wants to look like they've been duped. And so these guys are...
And so they go in deeper and take more money rather than admit that they've been duped. Kevin, in your case, whatever happened with the trip? Did anyone fall for it? Or the professor saved the day?
The professor just shut it down right there immediately.
Very interesting. Hey, thanks for your call. I appreciate that bit of information.
Yeah, I'm sorry to come in at the last minute. But
No. I appreciate the information.
Okay.
John, so this is a way that he buys influence. He takes people on trips to Korea and things like that?
Yeah, he's been doing it for all sorts of people for so long that, you know, so many people have taken this money for a nice trip with Reverend Moon that, you know, who's going to risk embarrassment by bringing that out? I mean, people like Chris Matthews went on a trip sponsored by Reverend Moon's, I don't know if he went on a trip, but he appeared at an event held by Reverend Moon's World Media Association, this junket, and took a hefty speaking fee for that. And Moon has managed to pay a lot of people. And, you know, why bring him up when nobody is campaigning against Reverend Moon? You don't see any political ads talking about how the Washington Times is associated with this anti-Christian movement. It remains quiet.
So I think it sounds to me like you're suggesting that Democrats, and not just people in Congress, but progressives of all stripes, need to talk about this. I mean, I'd love to hear, for example, Move On. Wouldn't it be great if Move On did an ad about Reverend Sun Myung-Moon is in charge here?
I would love to see that. I think that this is the kind of corruption that only the grassroots is going to be able to clear out of Congress. I think that the political establishment is too close to it and too afraid.
Well, just the way that, for example, when the crowning occurred, you couldn't originally get in the New York Times, Washington Post. You came here on the Inside Scoop. We did a show, and then Salon picked it up, and then finally the mainstream press picked it up. They're afraid, I guess, of criticizing a fellow journalist in Reverend Sun Myung-Moon with his newspaper. Is that what it's about?
Yeah, he's a newsman. There's so many things. There's this sort of political correctness where people in Washington are so out of touch with religion that they can't tell the difference between a legitimate religious leader and somebody like the Reverend Sun Myung-Moon, who is making his money off ripping off old ladies. There are a number of factors, and there's just this beltway mentality where it's just like, well, I guess that's perfectly normal to go to a dinner party where the owner...
Yeah, when I think of Al Gore and the money he got from a few Buddhists in a temple and he was crucified for it, and here you have Reverend Moon building an empire and no one knows. The name of the book is Bad Moon Rising, How Reverend Moon Created the Washington Times, Seduced the Religious Right, and Built an American Kingdom. The author is John Gorenfeld. You can get it at Amazon or any reputable bookstore. John Gorenfeld, thank you so much for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
Hey, thanks. Always good to be on.
Tune in tomorrow. It is April 1st, and you can imagine we're going to have a very special show in honor of the 1st of April. You'll hear it all tomorrow right here on The Inside Scoop.